Thank you. It's just my own Rabshlita. The Birkat Haminim is the bracha of V'lamal Shinim, and there are lots of variations of this bracha. It's very tempting to go into the history of all the different variations of that, but I don't want it to be a history lesson, so we're going to briefly refer to some variations, but look at more of the concepts behind it. It's generally believed that this bracha came about as a reaction to the emergence of Christianity. Hence the seasonal aspect of it. Tonight is called Nittel. Many people have the custom tonight not to learn Torah. How can you not learn Torah? But the custom developed for two main reasons. Number one, not to help the neshama of Osei Ish, and number two, not to go out to the Beis HaMedrash at night where the rowdy people might be starting on the accusations and beating us up and so on, and so it's best to stay at home. Once my father was in a Chassidish Beis HaMedrash in Golders Green waiting for a shiur to start, and it was on this evening, the 24th of December, and there was no shiur starting, and he went up to the Rav and said, "What's happened? Why no shiur?" And the Rav said, "Nittel." "Nittel?" He said, "Nittel, we don't want to help the neshama of Osei Ish." So my father said to the Rav, "Yes, but that's all very well, but Pope Gregory changed the calendar. He took 11 days out of it, so the real day for Christmas is really the 6th of January." So the Rav said, "Okay, in that case we'll stop learning then as well." Some people are so machmir, they won't learn the whole year round. Well, where does it come from? The Gemara Brachos Daf Chaf Ches, the Gemara Brachos Chaf Ches, Tana Rabbanon, Shimon Hapakuli Histi Shimon Esrei Brachos. So originally there were 18 brachos without the Lamal Shinim, and that came along Rabban Gamliel, Alaseida Biavne, Omar Lahem Rabban Gamliel Lachachomim. So Rabban Gamliel said, "Kulum Yesh Odom Shiadeh Lasakin Birkas Haminim." Is there anybody around here who could make the bracha of Birkas Haminim? Which is a rather odd thing to say, because you know how difficult it is to make up a bracha of let's do away with the minim. But it seems as though he wanted somebody who had the right sort of ruach hakodesh for it. Omad Shmuel Hakotan v'tikno. So this bracha was formulated by Shmuel Hakotan under the direction of Rabban Gamliel. In the Art Scroll Siddur, the text has 27 words, but there are various commentaries to say how many words it should have, and there are so many variations. In fact, no bracha has undergone so many differences if you start looking at the text. The most useful thing which the historians have been using is the Cairo Geniza, where hundreds and thousands of documents were found stored over a period of 400 years at a synagogue in Cairo, and the historians have been going through these to find multiple variations of the way this bracha has been written, and understandably so, because of the censors. The censors were so active in going through our texts that things got changed drastically. What is the practical significance of this bracha? The idea of it is that it is a curse to the minim, to the abikosim, to those who have departed from the true path. And so Chazal's intention was that anybody who is in the shul and davening at the omud, and this is out this bracha, that might be an indication that this person is a heretic. Why? Because nobody wants to curse themselves. And that was the way in which they managed to get them out of the shul. You see, before the churches were really well established, where were these new Christians davening? They were coming into the synagogues, and they were mixing amongst others, and they were calling themselves Jewish Christians. And it was worrying Rabban Gamliel a lot how to do something about it. Of course, there were other minim, abikosim, amongst the Jews. There were Sadukim, the Sadducees, the Karaites, others who are rejecting one part of the Torah, rejecting Torah Shebaal Peh. But it does seem as though the impetus which sparked off this bracha was the emergence of the Christian faith. It's very hard to find something on this in the sources because of the high degree of censorship. Listen to Midrash Tanchuma in Vayikra Beis. Over if now tevo, somebody who comes and davens before the omud, but tor, and he makes a mistake, below is gibbikas aminim, and he doesn't say that brocha. Menayin shemachzirin aso. How do we know that we make him go back? We force him to say it. Tor b'chola brochos ein machzirin aso. If in the other brochos he missed one out, we don't really have to make him go back. But tor b'bichas aminim, but he's missed out that particular brocha, machzirin aso. La'omer b'kocha, and we force him to say it. Why? Hashin on Shem on Minhu. We're worried he might be a heretic. She'im yehei bo tzadminus kolal atzmo. He will be cursing himself. Ve'onin hakol omein. So everybody's answering omein to his brocha. The brocha is a curse on the minim. So nobody who is a min will want to say this brocha because he's cursing himself. So what will he do? He will voluntarily leave. Some rabbis nowadays want to get rid of some people from their shuls. Maybe they want to devise some similar methods where they will leave voluntarily. But that is the way. Now, Rashi and Megillah, Daf Yud Zayin, Omud Beis, Dibur HaMaskol Kolu HaMinim. Most of the Gemaras we have now don't have this text in, but it was found in original manuscripts and it's found its way back into newly printed Gemaras. Kol HaMinim means Talmidei Yishu HaNotzri. Yishu is the common word given to him in Talmudic texts, in the Chesrona Sashas and others. Yishu stands for Yirach Shemo V'Zichrono. Some other places he is referred to as Yishu HaPandria, because his father was a Roman general called Joseph HaPandri. Anyway, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Mem Gimel, heavily censored. But again, some modern texts bring in what was found in original manuscripts. Chesronos Hashas. There's a Perish Yosef Chaim on the Ein Yaakov, which says on that Gemara Mem Gimel, Yishu Anotzi Nolad Le'imo Miriam Magdalos Sa'ar. She was a hairdresser, and she weaved people's hair. Magdalos Sa'ar, hence the name Mary Magdalene. And Zinsoim Yosef Pandri. She had a one-night stand with this gentleman, Umizen Olad Yishu. This is given in detail as to what actually happened in a sefer called Togus, Sefer Togus Yishu, how it came about, because she was apparently a very frum lady, but she was mistaken in the dark with somebody to whom she had already been betrothed. I say betrothed, not simply engaged. She had Erusin, and she did not yet have the Nisuin. We do the two together nowadays under the Chuppah, Erusin Nisuin. But in former times, Erusin was done months or even a year beforehand. So she had the ring on her finger to somebody called Yochanan. And so this gentleman, Joseph, approached her pretending to be him. And hence, as a result of that, the offspring was a mamzer. Well, the various formats of text which have been found are quite detailed, and well, I'll start with a sefer which was from the time of the Rishonim, Arachas Chaim.
Why would it be a mamzer?
Because he was born to a woman who had already erusin.
Yeah.
Once the woman has the ring on her finger, even if she hasn't consummated the marriage, she's called an Eishes Ish. So he is called Mamzer Ben Hanidah. Arachas Chaim, Hilchos Tefillah Os Yudzayin, Rabban Gamliel, are based in Tiknu Birkas Haminim B'Yavne, Mishirobu Haminim Shoyu Mitzoyim L'Yisrael. They were giving troubles to the Jews. B'Kosa HaBahag, and he brings the Bahag, Shezeh Hoyo Acha Maisa, and then there's a blank. There's just a blank in the text. And if you see this reproduced nowadays, you don't see the blank because the printer thinks that there's a printing mistake. But there was a blank which was somehow tipexed out by a censor. So it doesn't actually say the name. So the Arachas Chaim says, the Yeshbot Lamed Beis Tevus. There are 32 words in it. And he says the reason for that is because of the base starts of Bereshis, and the Lamed is the end of the Torah, the Einei Kol Yisrael. Lamed and base. So Minus Tolu Belev. Minus comes from the heart. Then he says, B'mokamakim Otsosi Kaf Tes Tevus. I found 29 words. However, this is very confusing, because if you look at the favorite Siddur of the Yekas, the Avodas Yisrael Harav Ber, he writes an extremely long essay about this very subject. running two long pages, and he goes through various texts and he quotes one place where there were 32 words, another place 34 words, 22 words. I count in the Art Scroll 27 words. But there are generally two main texts we've got in our Siddurim nowadays. The one we have in the art scroll is V'chol Haminim Kerega Yoveidu, or Kerega Toveid. Then the singer says, I think, had in it Umalchus Zodon Meheros Akeos Shaber. Most nowadays don't say Umalchus Zodon. We say V'hazeidim Mehero. So V'hazeidim Mehero is generally speaking about the people, but Umalchus Zodon is talking about the kingdom. And the Chayodon writes that one should not say Umalchus Zodon. He says it's an incorrect version. But the original version had Lamashumodim Altisikfo. Not the Lamalshinim. Malshinim are people who tell on you, people who snitch. The original text, especially in the Cairo Geniza text, which they found from Eretz Yisrael, because they were different than those from Babylon, and in the Israeli text, they found the word Lamashumodim Altisikfo, V'chol Haminim Kerege Yavedu, V'chol Ave Amcho Mehiroi Kereisu, Umalkus Sodon. That all our enemies shall be wiped out speedily in our days. It's a very interesting historical. There is, in fact, a whole book written on this by some academic from Boston University. I've got a long article from a couple of individuals, but this is very academic as to how did this develop and why do we say it this way or why do we say it that way. The Oruch HaShulchan in Simon Chof Chaf Sif Aleph, he says there are 34 tailors. Well, that's a contrast to the Art Scroll, which is 27. Anyway, we're not going to go down that route, how many words it should be. We have what's handed down to us. Rabbi Cooper used to say, we don't change what's handed down to us, even if it's wrong. Mm-hmm. The text which our parents did, we do, and that's the way we follow. But what's interesting is that although our texts were heavily censored, whenever, even if we praise Christianity for some reason, and there is a Rambam which actually speaks highly of the fact that many people of the world came to believe in one God by means of Christianity and Islam, which he writes was part and parcel of the lead up to the coming of the Mashiach, to get the majority of the world to believe in one God. So writes the Rambam in Hilchos Melachim, Perek Yod Aleph, Halacha Dalet. But that version is censored from many texts, because when the censors saw something about Christianity, they didn't really understand what it was saying, and they would cross it out, even if it might have been something which sounded positive about them. Rav Tzvi Lam did some research on this, and he says, although our texts were heavily censored, theirs weren't, because the censor didn't think about going through Christian texts to see what was going on. And it's interesting, because if one looks at some of the Christian texts, now I'm no expert in the New Testament or any of the Christian Bible, believe me, and I have to be careful not to quote it in such an auspicious building such as the North Pendennis Ash Yisrael Synagogue. However, Rabbi Lam, so I'm quoting a rabbi, he says if you look at the Christian writings, and he quotes from John chapter 9 verse 22, he says the Jews have already agreed that if anyone will confess Yeshu to be the God, he will be put out of the synagogue. And one of the earliest Christian fathers, called Justin Martyr, in what's called the Dialogue with Trifo, he lived in the year 156 of the Common Era, so he was one of the very early Christian fathers, and he wrote, he said, "For you curse in your synagogues all those whom you call Christians." He writes also, Justin Mitre, in what's called Trifo 137, "Assent therefore and pour no ridicule on," he talks about the so-called son, "obey not the Pharisaic teachers." The Pharisees were the traditional Jewish people. "Obey not the Pharisaic teachers and scoff not at," he calls, "the so-called king of Israel, as the rulers of your synagogue teach you to do in your prayers." And then, in another writing of Epiphanius, one of the early Christian fathers in the year 315 CE, in his famous work, Pyrenean, chapter 29, verse 9, he says, "These are the real Jews' enemies." He's talking about us as the Jews' enemies. He says, they have a hatred of them. They even stand up at dawn, at midday, and towards evening, three times a day, when they recite their prayers in the synagogues, and they curse and anathematize them. Three times a day, they say, God curse the Nazareans, for they harbor an extra grudge. Despite their Jewishness, they preach. I won't read out the rest. It's a bit too sounds a bit too Christian. But he says, for they have not accepted Jesus. And this then is something from the Christian writings to show, which endorses the fact that the Velam of Shinim was a kalola on the Christian faith. In a way, it wasn't going to stem the tide of people becoming Christians, but it was going to exclude from the synagogue service those people who were, in their heart, followers of Christianity. And it was felt that something needed to be done about this. The Cairo Geniza, just a bit, little bit more, with its different texts, someone called Langer found 112 fragments of Cairo Geniza, and finding at least 15 or 20 different versions of this bracha. We've spoken about Ulam Shumodim, Umalkul Sodon, Machnia Zedim, or Shove Ovim Machnia Zedim, and there's also a text Shove Rishoyim Machnia Zedim. There is another text found in an Israeli manuscript from the Geniza, Imlo Yoshuvu L'Sarosecho. So namely, please give a curse to these Minim, who are breakaways, unless Imlo Yoshuvu L'Sarosecho, unless they do teshuva and come back to the true path. But there's a question, and that is this. Was this bracha really a newly added prayer? Now, traditionally we say there were 18 brachas. This was the 19th. Although there may have been one or two other brachas which were added a bit later on, Semach David Avdecho, please reinstitute the temple, because the Shemona Esra was formulated by the Anshei Knesset Gdola at the beginning of the time of the Second Temple. So what actually was going on with the number of brachas? So traditionally there were 18, and this was the 19th bracha. But if you look in some original Midrashic sources, you will find the wording of this bracha alluded to. If you go back as far as the Medrash on Shmuel Aleph in the Yalkut Shimoni, where it talks about Vatispalel Chana, when Chana was praying for children, and we read this Haftarah on Rosh Hashanah, and there it lists a number of prayers which Chana was saying, and it's got there something about Machnia Zedim. Also in the Yalkut Shimoni in Esther, Tov Tov Reish Nun Hei, the Lamelech Ein Shavela Hanichom, Haman is accusing the Jews of the prayers that they say. He says they say the Shema, they stand and they say Machnia Zedim. They are mocking us. They are saying that we are Zedim. So there is a question which arises about the correctness of this, to say whether it was a new brocha. I've got the Yalkut Shimoni here, but also it says Ragli Chassidim Yishma Mekabez Nidchei Amo Yisrael Yodin Aseret Oiv Tzedokol Mishpot Rishoy Mechoshech Didmu Machnia Zedim Meitin Oz. So these prayers come under Vatispalel Chano. So how is it that these texts, Mavorich Hashonim is another one, Rofei Cholim, Goel Yisrael, and all this is listed as the types of prayers which Chano was davening? Pardon? Yeah, it says Machnia Zedim.
What does it mean?
Machnia means suppress. Those who are arrogant, those who are boisterous, those who are rebellious. And
arrogance. But I thought originally that this bracha was formulated at the time of the Tzedukim, the Sadducees, or should I say the Hellenists, mm-hmm. when they were in the Beit HaMikdash and they were trying to force their way on running the Beit HaMikdash.
Yes.
But the Rabbanim brought this type of prayer into the
There are some opinions who hold that this wasn't necessarily the Christians at all.
Yeah.
But there were so many amongst the Jewish people, minim reformers, so to speak, who were breakaways, who might have only kept the Torah Shebik Sav, not the Torah Shebal Peh, and there was a worry about how to deal with them. But the Gemara talks about Rabbi Gamliel, who was about 100 Common Era. Mm-hmm. Okay? Where Rabbi Gamliel, this was just after the destruction of the temple in the year 70 CE, Rabbi Gamliel was around the year 100 CE when they had set up their based in Yavneh. And the temple had been destroyed, and we were just rising from the ashes to try and salvage Yiddishkeit, and that was just the time when Christianity was finding favor amongst breakaways. So, alright, it was also amongst pagans as well. In fact, it's believed that the whole concept of the Christmas festival wasn't really because of the birth of Yeshu, it was because the pagans already were having a festival at that time, around the 25th of December, because there was doom and gloom as the days were getting shorter and shorter. Came the winter solstice on the 21st of December, and then afterwards the days started getting longer again. So there had always been a festival at that time to celebrate the days getting longer. So it's believed that the Christians latched onto that to try and turn the pagan festival into something religious. But there are those who say that Yeshu was born in the month of March, not in December. So that's another one for the academics. We won't bother going down that route. But the Christianity was about that time of Rabban Gamliel when it was gaining force.
You're saying that when the Tefillah was formulated?
And that was when Rabban Gamliel asked Shmuel HaKotan to devise this bracha. But it seems, and the Sefer Otzah Tefillos looks at this question about these quotes from the Yalkut Shimoni, that these seem to be phrases which Chana was davening, and they were phrases which were being quoted by Homon HaRosha, so these phrases were in the context. But we've got to remember, Sonic, that originally there were no formal tefillah texts, but there were concepts in tefillah which people were choosing to daven from, so that people would choose a particular bracha to suit their own personal material needs. So these texts did exist beforehand, says the Eitzah Tefillos. And people said the things that they wanted to say. But it was when the Anshei Knesset Agdola came along and the Sanhedrin of Rabban Gamliel came afterwards to say, right, here is now your formal text of your Shemoneh Esra, hence the development of the 19 brachas. So that was really the history.
So this tefillah is not so much against enemies per se, but against the
Well, what survived the census was the word Shever Oyavim, please break out enemies. Now, we've had plenty of enemies. We've had crusades, we've had inquisitions, we've had pogroms. We've suffered a lot. Where do you think the Nazis got the idea from to make Jews wear badges? This was all from Christianity. There's an amazing article once written by Esther Jungreis in the Jewish press when she wrote something about the priests of the church cloaked in their vestments of hypocrisy. And the local bishop in New York wrote in a letter saying how glad he is to have cordial relations with the Jews. But he asked for Esther Jungreis to apologize for her comment, which he found a bit of a slur, to talk about the priests of the church cloaked in their vestments of hypocrisy. And she was asked to apologize, and in her response, she said, how can I apologize for 2,000 years of persecution? How can I apologize when all the Nazis were doing were carrying on where the Christians left off? How they, for a period of 300 years, the Spanish Inquisition lasted. If you wouldn't accept the cross, you were burnt at the stake. There was no choice. Spain, Portugal, and all the countries of Europe with the blood libels and the suffering which the Jews had, it all came from the Christians. But in a voice of, how can you say, conciliation, the Rambam writes, although this is censored from my text of Rambam, but in the newly published ones, the big red set, it's got this text. He says, V'chol advarim ha'elu shel Yeshua ha'notzri v'shel Yishmo'eli she'omad acharav. All these matters which emanate from Yeshua, the Christian, and the Islam religion, she'omad acharav, eino elo liyashed derech lamelech ha-moshiach. This is all part of Hashem's divine plan to bring about the time of the Mashiach, or the sakenes ha'olam kula. Because before Christianity, the concept of monotheism didn't even exist. People didn't believe in one God. They had all these different things, like they were davening to the planets and weirdos. La'avod es Hashem b'yachad, that everyone will eventually be worshipping Hashem together. Etc. So there's something nice written, you could say, about our Christian brethren, but that too was rubbed out by the censors. That's Hilchas Melachim, chapter 11, section 4. And it's a very interesting insight which the Rambam develops, although some people might stumble on it, seeing that it might be a justification for Christianity. It isn't. But it's a way of looking at the way God is planning the world to bring about Mashiach over a period of time that the majority of the world would come to believe in one God. Although the Christians have what they call the Trinity, they say that you might say that's not really one God, and they call it, but it's generally seen by most poskim as an intermediary, a shutfus. What the idea of Yeshu and the other things they talk about in the Trinity are seen by many poskim as simply a shutfus to the idea of one God. Although there are some, like the Noda Behuda, who write that the idea of a shutfus is pure avodah zorah. We say Hashem Echod, Shema Echod, and there's no such thing as anybody else. As far as the Son of God is concerned, well, we're all sons of God, because Bonim Atem Lashem Elokeichem, says the Pasuk, we are all children of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, that's putting it in its context. As far as Islam is concerned, they do not have any intermediaries, they just regard Muhammad as a kind of prophet, and so there are many who will say that although you may not go into a church, you are allowed to go into a mosque, because although Islam is not for us, it is a departure from the Torah HaKodesh and the mitzvahs which are prescribed in it. Nevertheless, the idea of Islam is that they are only worshipping one God, whom they call Allah, which comes from the word Elohim. So there is also a little bridge for you. So that is V'lam Hashinim in its context. I've deliberately avoided going down the route of going too much detail of giving out handouts to show this text and that text. If you want any such information, I've got it all here. What I thought I would do is take out of it some lesson, a practical lesson, which to apply nowadays. And that is the idea of excluding people who are rebellious. You get this in every shul. You'll always have a couple of people at the back who are schmoozing and who are causing trouble and always complaining, and however much one tries to satisfy them, they're always there in every single shul. Alright, there may be some shuls where such groups decide to break away and make their own shul. And that is obviously a very fortunate thing for the Kehillot, where we didn't have to kick out the rebels, they went by their own accord. Fine. But I'm not suggesting I'm talking about anyone in particular, but if nowadays we have a problem, what does one do? First of all, on the V'lam al-Shinim nowadays, do we say that somebody who misses out that brocha is called a Christian? Not necessarily, but it's brought down to the Shulchan Aruch from the Tursim and Kuf Chaf Vav Sif Aleph, that a person who misses out the brocha V'lam al-Shinim is disqualified immediately from davening at the Omud. If he remembers himself, he can go back. And there's a Sefer Shigyos Miyovin which talks about when one makes mistakes and what do you do if you've missed out this brocha. You have to go back, and if not, such a person is excluded from the community. And the Mishnah Berurah brings down there in Sif Cotton Hay, even if such a person is Muchlak Matzadik, he looks like such a frum guy and he dresses up with his black hat or his shtraimel, if he misses out this brocha, out, he is excluded. There's an interesting story I'd like to tell you before I get onto the practical everyday halacha about chucking out people. Something else which I've come across to do with the Christian faith. And it's the most beautiful idea, and it's brought in the Sefer Emes LeYaakov of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky in the Parsha of Lech Lecha, and it's also brought quoting Rav Moshe Feinstein, but it's not in the Sefer Darash Moshe, it's brought in a Haggadah called Arzei HaLavonon, which quotes Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe met in his town in Poland when he was first place he was the Rav. He met a very elderly man who said to Rav Moshe, I've had this problem for years and I cannot understand what to do about it. I cannot accept this idea where the daughters of Lot managed to escape from Sodom. At that time they thought they were the only ones there. And so they decided, in order to carry on the human race, they'll make their father drunk and have a liaison with him. What did they name? They were the daughters of Lot. Each one gave birth to a son. One son they called Moav, and the other one they called Ben-Ami. And this man said to Rav Moshe, I've always had this problem. Why do the daughters of Lot call their sons Moav and Ben-Ami? Because Moav means Me'av, from my father. Now if you get up to some hanky-panky, right, that's one thing we might be able to understand. But to glorify it and to announce to the world that this child is from my father, is that something to be proud of? This was incest. Why does the daughter of Lot call her child Moav? And Ben-Ami is also a veiled expression of the son of my people. Namely, it's from my own DNA, as it were. This man said, I can't understand why the daughters of Lot would do this. And this elderly man, one night, he had a dream. And in his dream, one of the daughters of Lot appeared to him. And this daughter said, you know, we managed to get out of Sodom because we were one of the righteous people. We were not one of the wicked ones. Yeah, but then why do you... All right, you did what you did, L'shem Shemayim. You wanted to carry the human race. But why do you glorify it by calling your son Moav? So she said, we were worried that people would say that our sons had no father. And as a result of that, they will make our sons into gods. We foresaw that sometime in the future, there will be a child born illegitimately. People will not know who the father was, so they'll say, oh, this baby came from God himself. And they would worship him. And they would call him a god. They foresaw a future Jewess would give birth to such a child. A child who they would worship. And we wanted to avoid that from happening. We wanted to ensure that our sons would not be worshipped as gods like this future Gentile would be. And what happened when I say Gentile? All right, he was a Yiddish boy. And as a result of that, we wanted to suppress our own pride, the chilanu kavodenu, we suppressed our own kavod, leman kavod shamayim, in order to glorify the Kodesh Baruch Hu, to say that our sons would be called Moav and Ben-Ami, that nobody should worship them. Amazing. Right, coming out to our question, what do we do nowadays? I once knew a Rav very, very well, who had in his shul three people who he wanted to get rid of, and he confided in me who they were, and they were troublemakers. They were ones who were schmoozing non-stop and creating disruption, but I didn't want to say anything to disrupt him. I couldn't think of anything good to say about the first two, but the third one I said to him, I said, look, this guy, if you watch him, he only schmoozes when people come up to him and he schmoozes back. He doesn't instigate, and he's got a heart of gold. And please, I said, please, please don't do anything nasty to him. And he let that guy stay. But the other two, he waited for something drastic to happen, and he said to them, this place isn't really a good shidduch for two of us, is it? One of the guys actually for a whole year was sending emails pretending to be a young lady, leading on a guy who was unmarried, thinking he was onto an internet shidduch. I mean, it was disgusting. It really was disgusting. And when it came out, this Rob said to him, sorry, this is not the place for you. And he got rid of him. So, what is the halachic position on getting rid of people? We tried, Chazal got rid of the Christians from the shuls of the Bracha of Lahar Shinim in order that they curse themselves. But what about nowadays? Interestingly, the Gemara in Sanhedrin Kuf Zayin says, Tana Rabbanon La'olam Tehi Shmuel Docha V'Yamin, La'olam tehet, semel docha, you should push wicked people away with your left hand, the amin makarives, but you should draw them near with your right hand. Try to be makarif people, and not be like Elisha, shadochu legechazi. You may remember the story of Elisha, who was very upset with Gehazi, who ran after Naaman to ask for money. He got cured from the river Yarden, from his tsaras, and Elisha wouldn't accept money, and Gehazi secretly went and asked for the money. And Elisha got very angry with him, and it says, Elisha pushed Gehazi away b'shtei odayim, with two hands. He rejected him. And there's a censored version, which is in the Chesronos Hashas, which you don't find in your ordinary Gemara text. V'lo k'rav Yeshua ben Parachinya shedochaf Yeshu ha-notzri b'shtei odayim. And we should not behave like Yeshua ben Parachinya, who pushed away Yeshu ha-notzri with two hands. Who knows what would have happened if Rabbi Yeshua ben Parachia would have not pushed away Yeshu? Maybe there would have never been a Christianity with pogroms and blood libels and inquisitions and holocaust. Who knows? And was it not the case of Timna, the Pilegesh? Simna ha'isof Pilegesh le'elifaz. She was an Egyptian princess. She wanted to join the family of Avram Avinu. And Avram Avinu pushed her away. He didn't want to know her. So she wanted to do so much that she managed to get into Esau's family by becoming a concubine of Eliphaz, and she gave birth to Amalek. Who knows? If Avraham Avinu would not have pushed her away, maybe there would have never been an Amalek. So it's a very difficult balance. So what's the halachic position? Well, the Rambam writes in Yeridah, Shin Lamed Dalud Aleph, he quotes the Trumas Hadeshin, even if it means somebody will go off the derech, if a person is so disruptive, causing a bad influence, a person should be excluded. Trumas Hadeshin proves this from a Gemara in Kiddushin about Rabbi Yehuda Nossi. Some Jews in Bava were found fishing on Shabbos, and he recommended a cheirem. He said, we need to make a public statement to uphold the sanctity of Yiddishkeit, that if people are departing from it, we mustn't allow them to be an influence. Now, there's enough machlokas about this, because the Taz objects to the Ramah. He says, this is not a precedent. He says, from a Gemara in Kedushin, Daf Chof, if a Jew sells himself as a slave to an idolater and is helping that idolatry, there is an obligation to redeem that Jew. We have to bring him back. We don't want him defecting. But the Shach disagrees. In the Kudas Kesef, he says, if you're going to start allowing people doing rebellions and getting away with what they do and you don't take any action, batel din Yisrael. And the Chavos Yoyis says a similar thing. He says, you can't override this whole idea where if you've got a defector, you've got a rebel, and you want to exclude that rebel, and you're worried that that rebel will go off the derech and will be lost to Yiddishkeit, well, so be it. There was a local rabbi he talks about who didn't want to punish somebody in his community who was a rebel.
What about Acher?
Acher, oh, good one. Elisha ben Avuya. We once, long time ago, did a bagel share about Acher, Elisha ben Avuya. If somebody, this was an example where we do exclude him, but if you look at Perkei Avos, he is quoted.
Well, yeah, but he's also in the story of the, when they go to the end, who was Rabbi Kiba, he actually, he still learns with him.
Rabbi Meir. Yeah, Rabbi Meir was still learning with him because Rabbi Meir had this hope that he will bring him back.
Yeah.
And there's a lot about the fact that they went out together chatting about Torah, even though he had been dispelled by everybody else. So it's an interesting debate. And you're right that that was a real example of a defector. Do we exclude him or don't we? And Rabbi Meir tried very hard to keep him within the fold.
There's a young nimud in another shul on Tuesday where one of the topics is, can we learn from naughty rabbis?
Oh, right. But it is online. There is a shiur gave about Elisha ben Avuya. The Radvaz writes, Koyomai Animit Starel there. I'm with all my life troubled about the fact that somebody who was a rebel in his community was threatening to convert to another faith if he was going to be reprimanded. It's a tshuva of the Radvaz in Chelek Aleph Kuf Pei Zayin. He says, I'm torn between the loss of a soul and the need to uphold Torah values. If we're so worried about not wanting to lose people, we'll be doing away with Torah completely. You're going to increase theft and corruption and adultery and all these other bad things if we are going to let people get away with everything. Nevertheless, he writes, although that is a halacha, our leaders must be very cautious, and not everyone is the same, not every person has the same kind of identity, and we have to judge it carefully. One should try to draw people close with words and not rush to punish such people. So, yeah, you've hit the nail on the head with a very interesting question there. That is the debate in halacha. We saw how Chazal of old did it to get people to curse themselves, that we rid them from our shuls, but we have to do it in a very careful and sensitive way. So what has also been a historical analysis is a halacha l'maisa, which we can have quite a debate on, but there isn't any more time. Thank you for listening to me so patiently.